Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is May 19, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments and fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about BitMEX trading engine back online, company says, updated. NVIDIA disguised $1 billion in fickle crypto mining sales as gaming revenue, lawsuit claims. Libra taps another former FinCEN official as general counsel. EU supercomputers hijacked from COVID-19 research to mine cryptocurrency. BlockFi says hacker SIM swapped employee's phone, no funds were lost. DTCC considers DLT use in securities trading with two new studies. Hybrid blockchain maker Kadena adds Chainlink price feeds. Block.one failed to decentralize EOS, argues new securities fraud lawsuit. Bitcoin's impending golden cross may bolster bulls, analysts. The last word on Bitcoin's energy consumption. Now let's get started. BitMEX trading engine back online, company says, updated. The trading engine for BitMEX, formerly the largest Bitcoin derivatives exchange measured by open interest, went down on Tuesday at 12:13 Coordinated Universal Time, according to the exchange's status page. BitMEX supported roughly $2.2 billion in Bitcoin futures trading volume over the last 24 hours, according to SKU. At 12:28 Coordinated Universal Time, BitMEX updated the incident to a major outage and took the trading engine offline. During the incident, however, the website reported its API and web front end to be operational. When reached for comment, BitMEX told CoinDesk its engineers are investigating the issue to bring the platform back up as soon as possible. In an update soon after publication of this article, the exchange said, "The BitMEX trading engine is currently down. We're working to bring it back online as soon as possible. We can confirm all funds are safe, delayed orders will be rejected, and no liquidations will occur during the downtime. On coming back online, there will be a cancel-only period initially." Before Tuesday, BitMEX's most recent outage came on March 13 when the exchange suffered an aggressive DDoS attack that temporarily took the exchange offline for 25 minutes, according to a postmortem. Unlike the March incident, when Bitcoin crashed to 12-month lows, Bitcoin has stayed relatively stable, dropping less than 1% from its daily open, according to CoinDesk's Bitcoin Price Index. NVIDIA disguised $1 billion in fickle crypto mining sales as gaming revenue, lawsuit claims. NVIDIA, the multinational chip-making giant, is still being sued by disgruntled investors for allegedly under-reporting its sales of hardware used to mine cryptocurrency. According to the Register, the computer processing giant stands accused by a group of shareholders of attempting to pass off the sales of as much as $1 billion in graphics processing units, GPUs, used for cryptocurrency mining as gaming hardware. The shareholder class suit accuses CEO Jensen Huang, CFO Colette Kress and Jeff Fisher, Senior Vice President and Head of Gaming, claiming they knew the spike in GeForce GPU sales was related to the crypto mining boom and could not be sustained over the long term. The lawsuit dates back to the height of the crypto fervor in 2017, but an amended suit was filed in California last week, see below. The joint plaintiffs claim the defendants opted for a strategy that would capitalize on miners' fervent demand for GeForce GPUs while falsely telling investors that the spike in GeForce sales came from gamers, not miners. They then allege the company made it appear its revenue was sheltered from the ups and downs of the cryptocurrency markets. Defendants refused to publicly acknowledge that NVIDIA's proliferating sales were the result of fickle cryptocurrency miners, lest investors discount the company's stock to reflect the volatility of crypto-related demand, the filing states. See also, NVIDIA reports substantial decline in GPU sales to crypto miners. In 2018, NVIDIA's share price plummeted 20% after demand tapered from the mining craze the year before. As cryptocurrency prices dropped significantly, so, too, did miner profits, forcing many operations to close down. Via a trial by jury, the shareholders now seek damages from the company and its executives for what they claim is a violation of U.S. Exchange Act for misrepresenting where NVIDIA's revenues were coming from. Libra taps another former FinCEN official as general counsel. The Switzerland-based entity managing the Facebook-led Libra project has added a former U.S. government official as its general counsel. Announced by the Libra Association Tuesday, Robert Werner joins the project with a wealth of regulatory, financial crime compliance and enforcement experience from his previous roles as Director of the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, FinCEN, and Director of the Office of Foreign Assets Control, OFAC. Werner has also acted as senior counsel for the Undersecretary of the Treasury, Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, and Assistant General Counsel for Enforcement and Intelligence in the Office of the General Counsel. The new addition marks Libra's second hire of a former FinCEN official after Stuart Levy was brought on board as its first chief executive early in May. Levy, who is leaving HBSC for the new role, is expected to join later this summer to oversee Libra's efforts to combine technology innovation with a robust compliance and regulatory framework. In mid-April, the Geneva-incorporated Libra Association kicked off the process of applying for a payment system license with the Swiss Financial Market Supervisory Authority, a move it said was an important milestone as the Libra Association moves to a more operational phase of the project. See also, Libra's long road from a Facebook lab to the global stage, a timeline. The project has had its issues to date, however. After a tidal wave of regulatory kickback for its original concept of a stablecoin linked to a basket of fiat currencies, the plan was watered down somewhat in April, and it will now develop a number of stablecoins each representing a different fiat currency. Prior to joining Libra, Werner was also the founder and CEO of GRH Consulting and had held senior positions at financial firms including HSBC, Goldman Sachs and Merrill Lynch. I am grateful for the opportunity to join the Libra Association, as we work to transform the global payments landscape to empower billions of people, Werner said in the announcement. I have dedicated my career to combating financial crime and helping complex organizations achieve regulatory compliance, both in government and in the private sector. I look forward to meaningfully contributing to such an impactful project. EU supercomputers hijacked from COVID-19 research to mine cryptocurrency. European supercomputers programmed to search for a vaccine for COVID-19 were remotely hijacked last week for the purpose of mining cryptocurrency. According to a report by ZDNet, multiple supercomputers across the European Union were compromised by a string of malware attacks that required a shutdown after it was discovered they were being used for crypto mining, also known as cryptojacking. The hackers had gained entry via stolen SSH remote access credentials from individuals authorized to operate the machines. Security researcher Chris Duman, co-founder of Cato Security, told ZDNet the malware was designed to use the supercomputer's processing power to mine Monero, XMR. It is also believed a number of the compromised supercomputers were being used to prioritize research for a coronavirus vaccine, although details surrounding the hacks and the computer's purpose appear to have been left deliberately vague. Security incident reports came from Germany, the UK and Switzerland, with a potential hijack also said to have occurred at a high-performance computer located in Spain. The first reported incident took place on May 11 at the University of Edinburgh, which operates the Archer supercomputer. Due to a security exploitation on the Archer login nodes, the decision has been taken to disable access to Archer while further investigations take place, the university announced in a public update. To date, the Archer supercomputer is still down pending further security purges, as well as a reset of its system and passwords. The Archer and Cray, HPE system teams continue to work on Archer and getting it ready to return to service. We anticipate that Archer will be returned to service later this week, the university said. Spate of breaches. Germany-based BWHPC, an organization that coordinates research projects across supercomputers in the state of Baden-Württemberg, declared five of its high-performance computing clusters had to be shut down due to similar security incidents. A supercomputer located in Barcelona, Spain, was also impacted on May 13, with researcher Felix von Leitner declaring in a blog post the computer had a security issue and had to be shut down. On May 14, further incidents began cropping up, with the first one coming from Leibniz Computing Center, LZR, an institute with the Bavarian Academy of Sciences. The academy said it had disconnected a computing cluster from the internet after its security was breached. On Saturday, German scientist Robert Helling published an analysis on the malware that was infecting a high-performance computing cluster at the Faculty of Physics at the Ludwig Maximilian University in Munich, Germany. And in Switzerland, the Swiss Center of Scientific Computations (CSCS) in Zurich also shut down external access to its supercomputer infrastructure following a cyber incident on Saturday. Similar incidents have occurred in the past. Earlier this year, a group of hackers known as Outlaw began infiltrating Linux-based enterprise systems in the U.S. in order to hijack personal computing power and mine XMR. BlockFi says hacker SIM swapped employee's phone, no funds were lost. BlockFi said an attacker got hold of user's data by compromising an employee's phone and taking control of the person's phone number through a SIM swap attack. The New York-based crypto lending platform announced in a memo to users on Tuesday that a hacker whose identity remains unknown gained access to some of its retail marketing systems for just over an hour early on May 14. On May 14, there was a data incident at BlockFi that exposed certain client account information for a brief period of time. While no information was accessed that would enable the intruder to access your account or your funds, we believe it is in the interest of transparency to share the following details with you, and all of our other clients who were potentially affected, reads the memo, which was shared with CoinDesk. BlockFi said the hacker accessed confidential data, such as names, dates of birth, postal addresses, and activity histories. Other sensitive account information, including bank account details, social security and tax identification numbers, passport and driver's license numbers, and photo scans, were not affected in the data breach, the company said. User funds were also not affected. In an incident report, also published Tuesday, BlockFi said the hacker had accessed through an employee's phone. By tricking the mobile phone operator into activating the employee's phone number on another device, the hacker was able to access some parts of the company's internal systems. A BlockFi employee's phone number was breached and utilized by an unauthorized third party to access a portion of BlockFi's encrypted back-office system, the incident report reads. The unauthorized third party was able to access BlockFi client information typically used by BlockFi for retail marketing purposes throughout the duration of this incident. The report adds the hacker tried, unsuccessfully, to make withdrawals of user funds, before BlockFi was finally able to remove them from the internal system. In a statement, a BlockFi spokesperson said, a sole intruder gained minimal access for a short period of time to select internal marketing systems. The BlockFi team immediately mitigated the impact of the breach through a number of standing policies and safeguards in place to protect client assets and data. The issue has since been resolved and BlockFi's products and services are fully operational and secure, the spokesperson added. The spokesperson did not specify which mobile network the employee used. DTCC considers DLT use in securities trading with two new studies. Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation, DTCC, a giant of financial markets infrastructure, is studying whether distributed ledger technology, DLT, could accelerate its processing of securities. DTCC revealed two projects Monday aimed at integrating DLT with capital markets, ION, a proof-of-concept alternative settlement service, and Whitney, a security token method of private securities issuance and exchange. ION in particular envisions a radical future for a company whose already speedy clearing and settlement pipework routes nearly $2 quadrillion in securities every year, almost the entirety of the U.S. securities market. Perhaps digitized assets might flow smoother with DLT, DTCC opined in a project brief. It argued that improving the settlement cycle would have cascading benefits for market participants. Whether DLT is the right answer appears to be a matter DTCC has not yet fully addressed. By DTCC's own telling, ION is a proof of concept that has not yet proved its core concept, that DLT can function at scale. To effectively convey proposed business concepts, UI, UX was prioritized over a scalable architecture, DTCC said in the brief. Later in the brief, it said it is looking for the appropriate technical stack for ION. Much closer to functioning prototype, though still likely far from implementation, as DTCC's Whitney. This project tries to broach the haphazard private securities market with security tokens. Regulation D securities are not subject to the same rules or party to the same trading infrastructure as their public counterparts. That makes the markets for them far messier, according to Jennifer Peeve, Managing Director of Business Innovation at DTCC. The private markets are ripe for increased levels of automation and lack much of the infrastructure that has supported the public markets for decades, Peeve said in a statement. Project Whitney presents an exciting opportunity to leverage emerging technologies and develop completely new solutions from the ground up. DTCC hypothesized that a comprehensive platform security tokens could provide a better private security marketplace. Issuance, distribution and exchange would happen on-chain, as would compliance checks, and everything would also be stored in off-chain records, too. Whitney ran this concept for 12 weeks on the public Ethereum network. In that time, it hit trouble spots associated with high network activity, a scaling issue that ION, its counterpart, has not yet faced. Still, Whitney's dry run appears to have given DTCC a roadmap. It will offer test APIs to partner firms and iterate the prototype for more blockchains, including Hyperledger Fabric and R3 Corda. Hybrid blockchain maker Kadena adds Chainlink price feeds. Kadena is now integrated with data provider Chainlink for streamlined pricing feeds. Announced Tuesday, the project helmed by former JP Morgan blockchain leads has inked a deal to use Chainlink's existing set of off- and on-chain oracles for pricing Kadena-based assets, beginning with Kadena, KDA, co-founder Stuart Popejoy said in a phone interview. For Kadena, which markets itself as a high-throughput alternative to both the Bitcoin and Ethereum blockchains, Chainlink will provide developer tools for decentralized applications, dApps, based on Kadena's packed smart contract language. KDA itself has yet to be listed on any secondary markets, but Popejoy said the token should be listed on two top 10 cryptocurrency exchanges by the end of Q3 2020. Chainlink has figured out how to incentivize an ecosystem of multiple players with their Link token. They're already able to enforce certain concepts of governance and data quality, just by having a diversity of vendors, Popejoy said. For Chainlink, the Kadena integration amounts to another non-Ethereum blockchain subscriber to its price feeds. Tezos and Polkadot announced integrations earlier this spring. Chainlink is a blockchain-agnostic oracle network that works equally well with both public and private blockchains, and is therefore capable of providing off-chain connectivity to Kadena's unique approach to enterprise-grade blockchain infrastructure, Chainlink co-founder Sergey Nazarov told CoinDesk. Our decentralized oracle network allows access to high-quality data that is valued by institutions using Kadena's enterprise-focused hybrid blockchain. Popejoy said the Kadena blockchain is both sharded, meaning data is siloed across databases yet still communicative, and runs in parallel for optimum speed, technical features he believes mainstream markets will demand as the blockchain industry grows. In fact, Popejoy sees a future where nodes are too complex for the average user to manage, a value not shared by the leading public blockchains. We don't have a resistance to the network getting large enough that you really need professional services to run a node because we think that's where blockchain is headed, Popejoy said. Launched in January, Cadena raised $15 million in a 2018 funding round joined by Multicoin Capital and the venture arm of the owners of Fidelity Investments. The network is currently working on interoperability projects with both Polkadot and Cosmos. Block.one failed to decentralize EOS, argues new securities fraud lawsuit. A cryptocurrency investment fund has launched a class action lawsuit in a U.S. court against Block.one and EOS High Command, arguing the fraudulent scheme failed to deliver on its primary promise of decentralization. The Crypto Assets Opportunity Fund, CAOF, along with individual investor Johnny Hong, has accused Block.one, CEO Brendan Bloomer, CTO Dan Larimer, former Chief Strategy Officer Brock Pierce and former partner Ian Grigg, of trying to capitalize on the investor fervor for cryptocurrencies in 2017 to host an illegal securities sale. In a strongly worded filing with the Southern District of New York, plaintiffs argue defendants purposefully misled investors and artificially inflated the EOS token price during the year-long initial coin offering (ICO), which raised a total of $4.1 billion between June 2017 and June 2018. The filing reads, "This case arises out of a fraudulent scheme, fueled by a global frenzy over cryptocurrencies and unchecked human greed, to raise billions of dollars through sales of a cryptocurrency called EOS and unregistered security to investors in violation of the United States federal securities laws." Both COAF and Hong are seeking damages, to be agreed on by the federal court, from the defendants. The suit, filed Monday, has six counts. These include well-worn accusations such as Block.one aggressively marketed its token sale in the U.S. without first registering it with the Securities and Exchange Commission (SEC). But the case's linchpin is the accusation Block.one and its representatives made dozens of materially false and misleading statements about EOS, especially in attempts to promote it as a superior new type of decentralized protocol. In the filing, plaintiffs say EOS was always publicly described as decentralized, and that this formed a crucial part of the white paper and broader ICO pitch. But, they claim, this turned out to be false as soon as the protocol launched. It was the 21 block producers, BPs, who really controlled the ecosystem rather than the community itself, the filing reads. Key parts of the governance system such as the arbitrator, who could reverse and freeze transactions at will, were never disclosed at the time of the sale, the plaintiffs claim. As proof that EOS was not the decentralized protocol investors had been led to believe, the filing cites a statement Pierce made in 2019 after he had left Block.one when he claimed EOS was effectively controlled by a Chinese oligarchy. Block.one did not have the ability to create a decentralized EOS blockchain, the suit concludes. The plaintiffs say the failure to deliver on one of the sale's key promises as well as the costly voice pivot has had a negative impact on the EOS token price, which materially harmed investors like themselves. CAOF is an Illinois-based pooled fund set up in 2017 under the umbrella of Victoria Capital, a blockchain-specific investment and advisory fund. There is very little public information about individual investor Johnny Hong besides that he resides in Solvang, California. It isn't clear when CAOF bought into the EOS ICO or for how much, although a Medium post by CEO Brandon Elsesser, who is also Victoria Capital's chief investment officer, CIO, said in a July 2018 update that the fund had forsworn further ICO investing as it presented more risk than was deemed prudent. Block.one reached a settlement with the SEC last September, agreeing to pay $24 million in damages for running an unregistered securities sale in exchange for a waiver on the legal restrictions that would usually be applied. At the time, SEC Division of Enforcement co-director Stephen Paikin said in a statement that Block.one had failed to provide investors with the information typically included in a securities sale. Considering the $24 million penalty represented 0.58% of the initial raise, some criticized the settlement as little more than a slap on the wrist. Earlier this year, investors filed another complaint requesting damages against Block.one after participating in the token sale. Bitcoin's impending golden cross may bolster bulls, analysts. A widely tracked Bitcoin price indicator is about to turn bullish, potentially accelerating the recent uptrend of the top cryptocurrency by market value. The 50-day moving average (MA) of Bitcoin's price looks set to cross above the 200-day MA within 2 to 3 days. The resulting golden crossover, a long-term bull market indicator, would be the first since February 18 and only the seventh in Bitcoin's lifetime, as per CoinDesk's Bitcoin Price Index. The golden crossover will catch the attention of classical trend followers, said Su Zhu, CEO of Three Arrows Capital. Trend-following traders do not predict or forecast specific levels but simply join the trend, bullish or bearish, when they feel a strong directional bias has been established. They often employ moving average crossover strategies to decide whether a trend is developing. This is because averages, which are based on past data, crowd out the noise created by intraday fluctuations and paint a better picture of the broader trend. When a short-term MA moves above a long-term MA, a bullish cross is confirmed. That is considered a buy signal by trend followers. Alternatively, a bear cross is taken as a sell signal. Thus, the impending golden cross, once confirmed, could bring in additional buying pressure from traders who employ MA strategies, leading to stronger price gains. I think MA strategies often work because they are self-reinforcing, said Anthony Vince, head of trading at GSR. That viewpoint has logic as averages follow price and produce a bull cross following notable price gains. Once the cross is confirmed, more buyers join the market, potentially pushing prices higher. Leonard Neo, lead analyst at Stack, also expects the upcoming golden cross to bode well for the cryptocurrency. Moving averages tend to be one of the best performing strategies when applied to crypto, at least for the past couple of years. We expect the same to happen in this potential golden cross, as BTC should see some upward price pressure, said Neo. Indeed, the golden cross that took place last April yielded more than 130% returns over just a 64-day period. Meanwhile, the golden cross witnessed in October 2015 was followed by a quickfire 64% rally in just 8 days. Some observers, however, are of the opinion that moving average crossovers are lagging indicators and often trap investors on the wrong side of the market. After all, MA studies are based on past data and tend to lag prices. In the past, there have been instances where the golden crossover turned out to be a bull trap. The last golden cross was confirmed before Black Thursday, March 12, and the last death cross was confirmed before the April rally, said Darius Sitt, co-founder and managing director at Singapore-based QCP Capital. The July 2014 cross, for instance, yielded minus 23% returns from cross up to cross down, crypto research firm Digital Assets Data told CoinDesk. So, if history is a guide, golden crossover is an unreliable indicator of price trends. Different this time? What makes the upcoming golden cross different from some previous ones is the fact that it is supported by bullish fundamental developments. The rewards for block mined on Bitcoin's blockchain were cut to 6.25 BTC from 12.50 BTC last Monday. Most analysts expect the supply cut to put Bitcoin into a long-term bull market, similar to the one seen in the months following the second reward halving, which took place in July 2016. Additionally, the challenging macro environment brought on by the coronavirus outbreak and the unprecedented monetary stimulus launched by major central banks is expected to boost haven demand for Bitcoin. Hence, some analysts see a low probability of the upcoming bull cross turning out to be a bull trap. Fundamentals and technicals are lining up well for the markets now, said Zhu. Meanwhile, Neo said that the fundamentals of Bitcoin remain strong, which contemplates every reason for a break upside. The on-chain activity does show a strong holding sentiment in the investor community. The number of bitcoins held on exchanges has been steadily decreasing since the crash in March, and is now approaching a one-year low. This is the largest and most prolonged BTC exchange balance downtrend in Bitcoin's history, Glassnode, a blockchain intelligence firm, noted in its weekly report. Investors typically move Bitcoins from their wallets to exchanges when they expect prices to drop. On the other hand, coins held on exchanges are withdrawn when the cryptocurrency is expected to see a sustainable price rise. At press time, Bitcoin is changing hands near $9,800, representing a 0.6% gain on the day. The cryptocurrency found bids below $9,500 early on Tuesday, but is yet to cross above $10,000. The area around that level has proved a tough nut to crack over the past few days. With both fundamentals and technicals biased bullish, a move above $10,000 may happen soon. A successful break higher and the next significant level overhead would be the 61.8% absolute fib at $12,160 area, said Eddie Tofpik, head of technical analysis and senior markets analyst at London-based ADM Investor Services International Limited. However, over the past few days, the buyers have consistently struggled to keep gains above $9,840, as seen on the daily line chart. Another failure there could see the forming of a possible double top and contemplation of the $6,000 area, said Tofpik. The last word on Bitcoin's energy consumption. CoinDesk columnist Nick Carter is partner at Castle Island Ventures, a public blockchain-focused venture fund based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He is also the co-founder of CoinMetrics, a blockchain analytics startup. Much ink has been spilled on the question of Bitcoin's energy footprint. But amid the clarifying details and the energy mix calculations, we have lost sight of the most important questions. Anyone who wades into this muddy debate must consider the fundamentals before making a final assessment. Energy, a local phenomenon. Let's start with the basics. Many people, when decrying Bitcoin's energy footprint, point out its energy consumption and presume that someone, somewhere is being deprived of electricity because of this rapacious asset. Not only is this not the case, but Bitcoin's presence in many jurisdictions doesn't affect the price of energy at all because the energy there isn't actually being used. How could this be? The first thing to understand is that energy is not globally fungible. Electricity decays as it leaves its point of origin, it's expensive to transport. Globally, about 8% of electricity is lost in transit. Even high-voltage transmission lines suffer line losses, making it impractical to transport electricity over very long distances. This is why we talk about an energy grid. You have to produce it virtually everywhere, especially near to population centers. When you consider Bitcoin's energy intake, interesting patterns emerge. New data from the Cambridge Center for Alternative Finance has confirmed what we effectively already knew. China is the epicenter of Bitcoin mining, with specific regions like Xinjiang, Sichuan, and Inner Mongolia dominating. With the cooperation of mining pools, the Cambridge researchers were able to geolocate the IPs of a sizable fraction of active miners, creating a novel dataset giving us new insight into Bitcoin's energy mix. And the results are revealing, Sichuan, second only in the hashpower rankings to Xinjiang, is a province characterized by a massive overbuild of hydroelectric power in the last decade. Sichuan's installed hydro capacity is double what its power grid can support, leading to lots of curtailment or waste. Dams can only store so much potential energy in the form of water before they must let it out. It's an open secret that this otherwise wasted energy has been put to use mining Bitcoin. If your local energy cost is effectively zero but you cannot sell your energy anywhere, the existence of a global buyer for energy is a godsend. There is historical precedent for this phenomenon. Other commodities have been employed to export energy, effectively smoothing out ripples in the global energy market. Before Bitcoin, aluminium served this purpose. A huge fraction of aluminium's embodied cost is the cost of electricity involved in smelting bauxite ore. Because Iceland boasts cheap and abundant energy, in particular in the form of hydro and geothermal, smelting bauxite was a natural move. The ore was shipped from Australia or China, smelted in Iceland and shipped back to places like China for construction. This led to an Icelandic economist famously stating that Iceland exports energy in the form of aluminum. Today, Iceland is hoping it can replicate this model with the export of energy via data storage. This is why smelters are located in places where electricity is abundant, and where the local consumers may not be able to absorb all that capacity. Today, many of these smelters have been converted into Bitcoin mines, including an old Alcoa plant in upstate New York, pictured below. The historical parallels are exquisite in their aptness. Ultimately, it's just a matter of opinion as to whether the existence of a non-state, synthetic monetary commodity is a good idea. So to sum up, part of the reason Bitcoin consumes so much electricity is because China lowered the clearing price of energy by overbuilding hydro capacity due to sloppy central planning. In a non-Bitcoin world, this excess energy would either have been used to smelt aluminum or would simply have been wasted. My favorite way to think about it is as follows. Imagine a topological map of the world, but with local electricity costs as a variable determining the peaks and troughs. Adding Bitcoin to the mix is like pouring a glass of water over the 3D map. It settles in the troughs, smoothing them out. As Bitcoin is a global buyer of energy at a fixed price, it makes sense for miners with very cheap energy to sell some to the protocol. This is why so many oil miners, whose business results in the production of lots of waste methane, have developed an enthusiasm for mining Bitcoin. From a climate perspective, this is actually a net positive. Bitcoin thrives on the margins, where energy is lost or curtailed. It's about the energy mix. Another common mistake energy detractors make is to naively extrapolate Bitcoin's energy consumption to the equivalent CO2 emissions. What matters is the type of energy source being used to generate electricity, as they are not homogeneous from a carbon footprint perspective. The academic efforts that get breathlessly reported in the press tend to assume either an energy mix which is invariant at the global or country level. Both Mora et al. And Krause and Tolomat generated flashy headlines for their calculations of Bitcoin's footprint, but rely on naive extrapolations of energy consumption to CO2 emissions. Even though lots of Bitcoin is mined in China, it's not appropriate to map China's generic CO2 footprint to Bitcoin mining. As discussed, Bitcoin seeks out otherwise curtailed energy, like hydropower in Sichuan, which is relatively green. Any reliable estimate must take this into account. Silver linings. The prospects look even sunnier when you consider the changing nature of Bitcoin security spend. 87% of Bitcoin's terminal supply has been issued already. Due to the path Bitcoin's price took during the heavy issuance phase, miners will have been collectively rewarded just over $17 billion in exchange for finding those coins, assuming simply that they sold their coins when they mined them, even though the coins are worth $160 billion today. This is because most of those coins were issued at cheaper price points. If Bitcoin ends up being worth substantially more in the future than it is worth today, say, by an order of magnitude, then the world will actually have received a discount on its issuance. The energy externality of pulling those Bitcoins out of the mathematical ether will actually have been very low, due to the historical contingency of when, price-wise, those Bitcoins were actually mined. In other words, Bitcoin's energy expenditure may end up looking rather cheap in the final analysis. Coins only need to be issued once. And it's better for the planet that they be issued when the coin price was low, and the electricity expended to extract them was commensurately low. As any Bitcoin observer knows, issuance as a driver of miner revenue will decline with time. Last week's halving cut the issuance side of miner revenue by half. If I had to make a guess, Bitcoin's periodic halvings will at least offset its appreciation long term, making runaway growth in security spend unlikely. Fees will necessarily grow to account for a much larger fraction of miner income. Fees have a natural ceiling to them, as transactors must actively pay them on a per-transaction basis. If they become too onerous, users will look elsewhere, or economize on fees with other layers that periodically settle to the base chain. Thus, it's unlikely that security spend results in the world-eating feedback loop that has been posited in the popular press. In the long term, Bitcoin's energy consumption is a linear function of its security spend. Like any other utility, the public's willingness to pay for block space will determine the resources that are allocated to providing the service in question. Is it worth it? Now, despite all the caveats listed above, it's undeniable that Bitcoin not only consumes a lot of energy but produces externalities in the form of CO2 emissions. This is not under debate. Bitcoiners are often confronted on whether it's valid for Bitcoin to consume any of society's resources. But this question relies on a kind of utilitarian logic about which industries should be entitled to consume energy. In practice, no one actually does this. But this question is misspecified because it implies it would not only be possible but even desirable to centrally plan the world's resource allocation. The Bitcoin energy supplicants are mum when it comes to the energy used to illuminate Christmas lights, to power the data centers behind Netflix, or to distribute untold millions of single-serve meal kits. It's clear that because Bitcoin's footprint is so easy to quantify and an object of revulsion among the chattering classes, it is singled out for special treatment. Ultimately, it's just a matter of opinion as to whether the existence of a non-state, synthetic monetary commodity is a good idea. The truth is that Blockspace is a service which is paid for, and that's where its resource cost is derived. Something duly purchased cannot, by definition, be a waste. Its buyer derives benefit from its existence, regardless of anyone else's subjective opinion of the merit of the transaction. These same arguments have been made countless times about perceived costs of the gold standard, and rebutted on similar grounds before. Fundamentally, millions of individuals the world still value physical, bank-independent savings, so it still gets pulled out of the ground with regularity. As long as people value Bitcoin, so, too, will the Blockspace auction continue in perpetuity. The Bitcoin energy worriers need not despair, however. There is a solution. All they must do is persuade Bitcoin fans to use and value an alternative settlement medium. Their best bet will be to devise a system that is even more secure, offers stronger assurances, settles faster, is more privacy-preserving and is more censor-resistant, all without using proof of work. Such a system would be miraculous. I am waiting with bated breath. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.